Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. It's nice to be here with you at OC Talk Radio. And I want to welcome all our listeners to the next chapter with Charlie. And this is where we dissect strategies and tactics used by successful people to make life changes necessary for their meaningful life and their meaningful next chapter. And I learn from all of our guests, and I hope my listeners do, because it helps us decide what we're going to do in our next chapter. Now, today, we have a really exciting guest, because I'm very excited about the topic, and as I've spent some time with Dr. Anita, our guest, I have I'm looking forward to this show a lot. So my guest is Dr. Anita, and I hope I pronounced your name correctly, Polite Wilson.
Correct, Polite Wilson.
And she's affectionately known as Dr. Anita. And Dr. Anita has served as an executive coach, a workshop facilitator, organizational development consultant, helping people and teams raise their awareness. And this is important in what we'll be talking about, and leveraging individual strengths to accelerate organizational performance. With over 20 years of experience, she is a scholar practitioner with a deep knowledge. She refuses to call herself an expert. Now, we had a long talk about the difference between deep knowledge and expert. But she has a deep knowledge in adult learning, coaching, mentoring, and implementation of organizational leadership initiatives aligned with the goals and objectives of corporate, government, and nonprofit entities. So with that, let's bring on Dr. Anita. Dr. Anita, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie.
Hello, Charlie. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Well, I am excited, too, because, you know, you spoke to a group of high-level businesswomen, E-level businesswomen, at my wife's group that she runs and she's had for, gosh, 8 or 9 years now, called Influential Women, which is all executive women. And she said your message would be perfect for this show, which makes me even more excited about talking to you and about how you attain success and using maybe a bit different methodology than we've focused on. I'm such a believer in lifelong learning. And you talk about focusing on leveraging your personal strengths. Mm-hmm. And I put, instead of focusing so much time on improving your non-strengths and weaknesses, which seems to be the habit of organization, is let's take a look at what you're not good at, and let's make you good at that, when we could be focusing on an entirely different arena.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
Well, I am a Gallup certified strengths coach. And for those who are not familiar with that, there's a book called StrengthsFinders 2.0. And I discovered that in the late 90s, early 2000s, and it literally changed my life when I understood what my top five strengths were. But then when I really understood what my top two strengths were, it made so much more sense. And I think the biggest challenge that leaders have is because they're always looking at the deficit. What do I need to do to make things better? What do I need to do to get to the next level? What do
right.
I need to do to capture the next audience? We seem to forget that that does not necessarily apply to people. And that if we help people take what they're good at and build upon that, we don't need to worry about their opportunity areas, i.e. weaknesses, unless it's in the interpersonal development skills. That's my personal philosophy. Because if you're always focusing on what's wrong, how are you ever going to feel good about what's right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's what you do right is what makes you successful. And if you focus on developing that area or leveraging, as you say,
yes.
that area,
yes.
then you're going to be much more successful than spending all your time mm-hmm. on some pity-anny little thing. But I like what you said. You said something that I'd never heard before.
Mm.
You said those kinds of improvements may be good for organizations, but they're not good for people.
That's right. And I think a lot of times leaders seem to forget that organizations are made up of people. And to move the organization forward, you must move people forward. And to move people forward, you really need to focus on what they're already good at. I like to present the concept of success partnerships. For example, if I need to put together a presentation for a report, and I'm not that good at the research, but you are, I'm going to partner with you to help me get the research done so that I can make the presentation, which is what I am good at. Here's the thing. Before I get started, I'm going to openly acknowledge, and this presentation really, really benefited from Charlie's expertise and his subject matter knowledge. So let's give some appreciation to Charlie. What have I done right there? Number one, I've brought you into the forefront and actually made a whole new audience aware of what you can do. And so now your expertise is out there. As a leader, how cool is that to say, wow, someone acknowledged me in this audience, and so now they know what I'm good at. So I don't feel beat up because I'm no good at research, but I have the good sense to partner with you and give you credit for what it is that you do.
That's perfect. That's amazing. And you're building relationship with that person. So if you happen to be coaching or mentoring that person, it becomes more about that person than it does become about you.
Absolutely.
And that relationship is certainly going to grow. And the trust level between the two of you is going to increase incredibly.
Absolutely. And work gets done through relationships. We forget that.
Yeah, we're going to talk a bit about that. And because I saw, you know, as I was reading through your materials, that communication was so important, and work does get done with relationships. And so many, you know, I bring this up, and I'm an outlier in the 12-step community, in that they believe so much in program. Mm-hmm. And it's the program that brings about sobriety or the end of drug abuse or whatever it is. And I'm all the time telling them that the program is very helpful. It's essential. I mean, it is. So there's nothing wrong with the program. And I'm a strong advocate of the program. But what makes the difference is relationship.
Absolutely.
To whom am I accountable? To whom can I, who can I go to if I'm struggling, if I'm wrestling? Do I trust that person? That's what's going to bring about change of life. It's that relationship that's going to bring about change of life. It's not, well, I don't want to say it's not the program. The program helps. The program definitely helps. But if you only had program without relationship, it would fail.
And I think in addition to that, the most critical relationship that we miss the mark on is the relationship with ourselves. One of my taglines for my Facebook page is, stay blessed and keep it real. We are blessed to be a blessing, and unless we keep it real with ourselves first, we can't keep it real with other people. And unless you keep it real, then you really don't have a true relationship. And so just being real is huge. Real enough to say, what's going on with me? Where is this coming from? How do I deal with it? I don't know how to deal with it. Where can I find someone to be a success partner for me to deal with it? Whatever that it is.
Yeah, I like success partner. You know, I'm listening to a book right now on, I rarely listen to audiobooks, especially if they're 10 hours long, but I'm listening to this audiobook called The Book of Freedom. And the book talks about two different types of selves, the small self and the divine self. And the divine self does not mean you're, you know, you're seeing auras and, you know,
right,
doing all this weird kind of stuff. But the small self is built on ego, which is built on the need for self-esteem and the need for self-importance. And right along with what you were saying, if we're focusing on that small self and focusing, and that's based on fear. Fear is what causes us to need greater self-esteem or greater self-importance. And if we can remove that fear and remove that, we can be ourselves, and we're free to be the kind of person you were talking about, that is, knows yourself, is comfortable with yourself, and works in accord with that rather than what other people are expecting.
Absolutely. I've heard this wonderful little acronym for fear, false evidence appearing real. And Fear.
I think our president has something about that.
That's for a different podcast.
I'm not a political show, so don't worry.
But false evidence appearing real, it's a little word that's got a huge impact. And what causes fear is the unknown. So if I don't know what's going on, regardless of the issue or the situation or the circumstances, there's going to be some fear involved in that. When we can step back and, again, keep it real with ourselves so that we can be real with other people, that eliminates the power that fear has over us. False evidence appearing real is basically when we start making up stories in our head because we don't know what we don't know. As soon as we begin to get some knowledge, some information, some data points, then that fear begins to subside.
You know, you said once again, you said a statement quickly that really needs to be focused on. And I'm in the middle of startups and in the startup community. That is such an important statement. You don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like the sound of one hand clapping at first, but it's not. You just are not aware of what you don't know. And then when you learn these things, you change your entire strategy. Mm-hmm. And all of that seems to work really well together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And just as important as knowing what your strengths are understanding what your strengths are not. And that's part of knowing what you don't know. I know I don't know this. That's not a strength. I need to find a success partner. It's really pretty simple. I think we make it harder than it needs to be.
Is that what you mean by leveraging?
Mm-hmm. If you know the areas that you're strong in, continue to focus on those. The areas that you're not strong in, and again, unless it's interpersonal skills, because as we've already said, work gets done through relationships. That's not to say that we manipulate and use people. It's to say when you have relationships with someone, you're more likely to go out of your way for them, and they're more likely to go out of their way for you.
Right.
So, but when we talk about leveraging our strengths, it's just as important to know what we're not good at so that we've got the initiative to go find that success partner that we need. And therefore, everyone has value. Everyone brings something to the table. Everyone does. I'm a firm believer in that.
Yeah, I have seen that in all the teamwork that I have done. Mm-hmm. I mean, the works with teams that even the most, the person, the lowest regarded person really does have something to bring to the table.
Or the person who really is seen as the biggest irritant on the team. One of the examples that I use when I talk to leaders, I say, now think about negative Ned. Nobody ever wants negative Ned around. But if you've got an important proposal that we're trying to get Paul to accept.
And
we think between you and I, Charlie, that we've got this proposal that's just going to knock Paul's socks off. Do we want negative Ned to look at that? Yes, we do. Here's why. You and I are already in groupthink. We think it's awesome. But negative Ned might see some things that, well, Paul's going to ask about this, and he's going to ask about that. Did you think about the other? In that case, we can turn from an attitude of negative Ned, we don't want him on the team, to Ned brings value because he's going to see the things we hadn't thought about, give us a chance to go think about it, and present a more complete proposal to Paul, which Paul is more likely to say yes to.
And in addition, you've brought Ned on your team.
There you go. Everyone
now
has value. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Sometimes we've got to dig a little deeper, but everyone has value.
So tell me, let's go back just a little bit. I'm curious, as business consultants, we always have choices on what we're going to focus our business on.
Mm-hmm.
and where we're going to market our primary area of deep, I have expertise, I'm going to put it, of deep knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you come up with an emphasis on personal strengths as your area of deep knowledge?
Because it so resonated with me. I really believe that everyone is packaged with potential for purpose. I believe that. And I also believe that everyone is gifted with something to shift them to new levels of success. Unless you unwrap that gift and understand what it is, you have no idea how much you're shortchanging yourself. And because we are so conditioned to define success according to what other people think and believe, we don't think and believe that we bring enough value to the table, and that's just not true. That's just not true. Ears bring a different value than a nose, but do we compare what the ear can do to what the nose can do? Absolutely
right.
Not. Why do we do that with people?
that it's so true. You talk about what I call the art of self-discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And as a lifelong learner, that statement certainly intrigues me. What do you have in mind when you talk about self-discovery?
A myriad of things. Based on my research, I created a self-reflective learning model. It's called SHIFT. Self-assess, hone in, investigate, fix, and team. And I love assessments. The simpler, the better. Because an assessment is different from a test in that a test is right or wrong. An assessment is what it is. Once we discover what is, then what do we do with it? That's the honing in on it. So based on the results, you know, let's hone in and see what that means. And then the investigating is taking it a little deeper. Fixing, that's really about fixing our self-perception so that we can fix our self-talk. And then teaming is going out and finding people that will help support our goals as far as moving forward.
Talk to me about self-perception. How am I going to change my self-perception is culturally ingrained. I mean, I've had this self-perception since 4 years old,
mm-hmm.
and many of it has not changed. How do I go about altering my self-perception?
Raising one's awareness, and I know that sounds really simple, but it's the truth. I have recently dipped my toe into the world of diversity and inclusion, and I have the privilege of working with a client in Las Vegas. And one of the segments that we work on is called dots. And we have an exercise where we'll name off certain aspects of someone's life and we'll ask you to put a dot representing the color of that type of person in your box. And at the end, a lot of people have just white dots because their world was primarily white, or just black dots because their world was primarily black, or what have you. And throughout the exercise, we realize that when we're coming up, we don't choose our parents, we don't pick where we go to school, we don't pick any of that. But as we become 18 and older, then we have some choices. And we realize that the person who we have become was shaped by factors we had no control over. And there's no judgment to that. It is what it is. But then once you're aware, you can be intentional about moving forward differently and associating with different people and different ways of doing things. The key is it shapes our behavior. It shapes our thought patterns. It shapes our approach. When we are aware of that, we can arrest some things. The fast brain says, well, based on the types of people that I've worked with in the past in this particular situation, you look like that. I'm going to make that assumption. That's where biases come in, unconscious biases. The slow brain, and this is by Daniel Kahneman, says, you know what? Even though I've seen someone that looks like you and this looks like a similar situation, I'm going to be intentional about dealing with you on a case-by-case basis, and let's have a different outcome. So the message that I have is we raise our awareness so that we can create new experiences for ourselves and others, because you're absolutely right. The perspective that we have is the perspective that was baked into us when we were younger. We don't know any different unless we raise our awareness. And you yourself told me you'll take a month-long vacation, not as a tourist, but to immerse yourself in culture, to understand how other people think and be and approach. And that's all we're asking people to do, is raise your awareness. No judgment about the way you're raised, but now that you are aware, you're also responsible to do some things differently.
How do you encourage people who are stuck in their way of thought to begin to alter their perception?
That's a really good question. You can't force people.
No.
And I'll be honest with you, the classes that I'm teaching, people are required to be there. And they come in with their arms crossed and not necessarily wanting to engage. But by the end of class, everyone has changed. The room full of people that I see at 8 a.m. is a different room full of people than I see at 5 p.m.
Are they taking an assessment during that process?
It's a slight assessment. They do a lot of journaling. We take them through a lot of exercises and ask them, all right, how inclusive of a leader do you think you are? We'll take them through an exercise. And the next question will be, how will you lead differently based on what you felt and discovered? And we usually start with debriefing feelings first, because even though we're in a logical thinking world, so to speak, people work based on their feelings. If I don't feel included, if I don't feel valued, you're not going to get the best out of me. So we help people to first process those feelings so that they can understand. If you're talking about being an inclusive leader, you need to include everything about everyone. Psychological safety. Are people safe enough to show up and do their best without feeling like you're trying to turn them into someone that they're not?
Boy, safety is a big word. I want to come back. I think I'm gonna start with that. I want to come back after our break,
okay.
And we'll talk a little bit more about safety, because I think it's a roadblock
mm-hmm.
to discovery and change.
It is.
So let's take a quick break and we'll come right back. All right.
Great.
Thanks. Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I am here with Dr. Anita Polite-Wilson, who is, I want to say expert, but she doesn't like the word expert. She likes the word,
deep knowledge.
So I have to be careful about using the word expert without getting a sly look from across the table.
I'll tell you why I don't like the word expert. And it's because in my experience, people who put themselves up as experts are not open to changing their frame. And I absolutely am. As a matter of fact, when I go in and work with people, I tell them, I'm looking forward to learning as much as I share. So that's my thing.
And you know, and you explained that to me over lunch, and I which I didn't feed you.
No, you did not. So I'll be back. If you'll have me, I'll be back.
I so agree with that one must be willing to evaluate critical places and belief systems mm-hmm. and I've adjusted my belief systems radically,
mm-hmm.
Very radically. I am fond of telling people, don't believe anything I say today, because tomorrow I'll probably change my mind. And it's not that I'm being whimsical, it's that new data could arrive.
That's right.
You know, I could get new data that says, boy, what you thought was true, there's some data that's challenging that
mm-hmm.
thought,
mm-hmm.
and you need to consider it. You need to read up on it. Doesn't mean I just change my mind because somebody throws me a data point,
mm-hmm.
but I will take a look at it.
That's right.
And make some changes. Now, we were talking about safety.
Mm-hmm. Psychological safety.
Psychological safety.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, on your Maslow's chart, I believe that's number two on mm-hmm. the Maslow's chart, I
mm-hmm.
believe.
Mm-hmm.
Physical,
right.
Food and shelter and all that. But I believe safety and security.
I believe you're right.
Is number two on Maslow's chart of
mm-hmm.
hierarchy of
needs.
And if somebody doesn't feel safe in their change, it's going to be very difficult for them to make that change.
Well, before they can even begin the change, they need to feel safe in recognizing and sharing what is. Remember, I like to define assessment as the results are what is, not right or wrong. There's nothing right or wrong with people. It's what is. Now, how are people showing up? How are people engaging? How are people interacting? There are more productive behaviors, and of course there are things that are right and wrong. That's why we have sexual harassment training and things like that. But when it comes to people and how we're made up, there is no right or wrong. It's what is. What do we do with what it is that we find?
Yeah, that's perfect. I'm a strange believer, and there's not a whole lot of right or wrong, but just is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, I guess I prefer better or best,
mm-hmm.
But safety is somebody has to be able to compromise their safety or to let go a little bit of their safety to just walk into a new area. You know, you said I like to go to other countries and learn about cultures. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've changed my idea about culture and about American culture, and it's not that I'm against American culture, but I've come across so many different cultures and so many different ways of life that I've learned so much from it, and it's impacted my life personally a tremendous amount. You know, now I'm going to change topics a bit, because what I want to hear about is that you use an instrument called Strength Finders. Is that right?
I do, yes. I love Strength Finders.
Tell me about Strength Finders, because I'm not sure all of the people on our show
is a tool that was created by the Gallup organization. I think pretty much everyone's familiar with Gallup. They do political polls and, you know, opinion surveys and things like that. And Strengths Finders is an assessment that of 34 strengths, it will give you results in your top 5 strengths. Everyone has a different combination of strengths. I believe the last statistic I read was that, you know, so many point billion people do not have the same strengths. But if they did, let's say you and I had the same 5 strengths, they would be in a different order. But even if in the unlikely, you know, event that we had the same strengths in the same order, we use them differently. And strengths really helped me as a young professional to figure out why I didn't always fit into a box, because I'm a round peg. Not only that, when I really understood, you can be aware of your strengths, but to really understand your strengths takes your ability to be productive in a whole new level. My top strengths are maximizer and influencer. So I'll just ask you, if you just think about, you know,
are those
English
two
language,
different strengths?
They are. I'm sorry, maximizer and relator. So if you think of the word maximizer, what do you think that says about me?
It seems you will take a situation wherever it's at, and you will take it to the next level.
That's right, as it relates to people. Now, if you think about the word relator, what do you think that means about me?
I think that means you're good with people.
Right.
And people are very important in your life, and you make them important in your life.
Absolutely. So if you take that top strength of maximizer, bringing out the best, and relator, people being important, a maximizer helps the people get exactly where they're trying to go and beyond where they thought they could go. And a relator builds deep relationships by helping people reach their goals. So as a facilitator, as a personal development coach, even as a cycle instructor, those top two strengths of maximizer and relator are consistent across my life. I don't care what I do. And my personal mission is to influence everyone to discover, develop, and deploy their strengths every day, because I believe in it so much. When people can nail what they're good at, they can just build on that and be good at that across every area of their life. We need to show up consistently, whether it's for personal or professional endeavors. And now, when you do your strengths, you can do that.
Those are critical strengths for a coach.
Absolutely.
Or a mentor.
And a facilitator.
What was the term that I there's a mentor and there's a sponsor.
Yes, yes.
I'm just learning about sponsorhood.
Yes.
And I sponsorship, and I think it's even more vital than mentoring.
Yes, but, yes. Those are key roles on a personal board of director. Your coach, your cheerleader, your sponsor, your mentor, and your champion. Absolutely.
Oh, look at you got names.
I do. Deep knowledge.
So those are perfect for a coach. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are ideal. That would make me want to say, boy, I want to work with Dr. Anita, because I get that she cares about me as an individual, cares about my success, and she can maximize my success.
And it's so genuine. I got to share this story with you. I was in Vegas with my client a few weeks ago, and another company was there on some kind of corporate-sponsored event, and the gym was packed. So I went downstairs. It was still dark in the morning. I was just trying to find a safe route. And I came across this young man who was ahead of me. I said, excuse me, are you walking or running? He said, I'm walking. I said, well, do you mind if I trail you? I don't want to interrupt your private time, but can I walk, you know, behind you? He said, no, come walk with me. We talked for an hour about strengths. I didn't know him. He didn't know me. He offered to buy me a smoothie. We got back. He said, you know, I would love for you to be my coach. He lives in New Jersey. A month later, we're coaching together. because the authenticity of what I feel about people's potential is so real. Someone that I didn't know, someone who lives in a whole nother state, has been my client for the last 3 weeks.
What are the challenges you face as a coach in strengths?
Really helping people to recognize it for what it is. And so before I can really get into their strengths, when I do the assessment with them, for instance, there was this one young woman who's just phenomenally successful. She built a multi-million dollar company, sold her share in it, and went and bought a plane and ran a training institute. And she's got a nonprofit. She's just phenomenal. And when I was telling her about strengths, being an entrepreneur, she's trying to save money. So instead of buying a new book with the code in it, she buys a used book and looks through all the strengths and tries to pick her strengths. I said, can you just humor me? Spend the $25, get the book so that you can take the actual assessment. So the five that she chose for herself, two of them were right on the money. The other three she didn't guess. And she said, you know, I'm just not sure about these three. So in talking with her, I said, well, let's look at this one. Don't you do X, Y, and Z? Yeah, that's this strength. Let's look at this one. Well, aren't you doing A, B, and C this way? Yeah, that's this strength. So let's look at this one. Well, aren't you leveraging this when you do these things here? I am. So now do you believe in your strengths? She said, yeah, I never thought about it. I said, that's because they're strengths. You use them all the time. And that's the whole point of leveraging our strengths. It's who we are. Why on earth would we try and do something different that isn't who we are and make ourselves miserable in the process?
Why does it help us to know our strengths?
Because it helps us identify an emergent theme in our life, our purpose, I think. I know that my purpose is really helping people be their best. And again, whether that's in the corporate boardroom or in a spin cycling class, I can see the potential that people don't see in themselves and can help nudge, sometimes push them in that direction. And when they discover it for themselves, it's life-changing. It really is. And I don't mean to be dramatic. It is life-changing.
Oh, you know, I firmly believe it. I took Strength Finders, you know, when it first came out. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could remember what my strengths were.
You can take it again.
I thought about doing it.
You should.
I thought about taking it before I came on the show, and I didn't. I just didn't get the book quickly enough to do it. But I'm in the middle of a, you know, at 69, I'm a lifelong learner, and I have a coach, and we are working on a thing that many of the listeners are familiar with, and it's called Archetypes.
Yes.
And one of my archetypes, and it would come out in Strength Finders some way. I don't know the name, but it's the leader. I don't know. What name would that come out as?
Well, Strength Finders has domains. There are four domains. There is executing, relationship building, influencing, and strategic thinking. So I would think that leader would either go under influencing or strategic thinking.
Yeah. And I just came back from Africa. And I made a, in which my leadership capabilities really emerged in a very, very strong way. And I have evaluated with my coach, you know, what kind of leader I am, that I'm very collegial, yet not afraid to make a decision when a decision has to be made. But I work with people so people don't feel like I'm coming in and dictatorial, that we're working together unless I have to do something. But just that knowledge, Dr. Anita, just knowing that leadership was one of my strengths and seeing other people respond in such a way really helped me be a better leader. I don't know how, you know, what it did, but it helped me, you know, being cognizant of the fact that leadership was a strong aspect of my personality. That or my talent list was very helpful.
Not that you would need it, but I would say to you or anyone, it's just another indicator of our self-confidence. When we know what we know, we can walk into any situation and be confident. And it doesn't matter that I'm not showing up as Charlie Hedges. I'm not Charlie Hedges. My strength is as Dr. Anita. His strength is Charlie Hedges. Together we make a powerful team, but I don't have to be intimidated by Charlie because I know who I am.
Boy, Boy, that's brilliant. I really love that. I don't have to be intimidated by somebody else because that's not my strength. That's theirs. Right. Mm-hmm. And we can, is this leveraging? We can work together and we can leverage that as a team.
Absolutely.
And we can, together, we can produce an even better product. Mm-hmm. And I think knowing it, I don't remember if we talked about it on the radio or we talked about it before, but the book that I'm reading that talked about the small self, did mm-hmm. we talk about that on air already?
I think so, just a little bit.
But, you know, depending on or influenced by mm-hmm. the need to be my self-esteem needs, my self-importance needs, mm-hmm. if I know I'm a leader and I know I can do that well, that diminishes that small self, that diminishes that need for ego, because I'm not doing it for ego, I'm just doing it because it's natural ability.
There you go, that's your self-actualization right there.
And I'm having fun doing it.
Absolutely.
And doing it well and doing it in a relational manner. Mm-hmm. That means other people are accepting of it and other people are appreciative of it. Mm-hmm. Nobody's feeling, you know, that I'm coming in and taking over.
That's right. I think there are two points that I want to make about strengths. Number one, oftentimes in the office, folks have challenges with other people, again, because they don't understand their own greatness. If I'm so busy looking at Charlie's greatness and Paul's greatness and what makes you two so awesome, I can be intimidated by that. But if I don't recognize my own greatness and what makes me awesome in my own right, there's no way that I can ever feel like I can be partners with you. That said, I know that a lot of people have concerns about only focusing on your strengths. Well, that's not to say that there is not room to grow when you're looking at your strengths. I had mentioned the four different domains, strategic thinking, influencing, relationship building, and executing. When I have done this with teams, oftentimes, especially in the aerospace industry, which I just came out of, a team would be very light in people with the influencing skill, but that's okay. If I ask you what's inherent in relationships, what would you say? Just a few things.
Respect.
Mm-hmm.
Loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
Inherent in relationships. Compatibility.
Mm-hmm.
But respect is big for me.
Mm-hmm.
Respect is a big word.
Mm-hmm.
And loyalty.
And if we have respect and loyalty for one another, we have a relationship. It means we have influence with one another.
Yes.
Right? So if you've got a team and you're light in the domain of influencing, but you've got folks that are strong in relationship building, because influence is inherent in relationships, you can leverage that into the domain of influencing. And so back to our earlier example, if we need to present a proposal to Paul, but we don't have anyone who's specifically strong in the influencing skills, we can take someone who is relational, who can build that bridge and deliver that message to Paul in a different way, but still have the result of someone who's strong in influencing.
That makes sense.
And that is the other beauty of strengths. You can still grow and develop, but it's going to be so much more comfortable and mean so much more because you're doing it in an area that you're already strong in, not an area that you're struggling in.
Now, what do you do with the areas you're struggling in?
Find somebody else. Seriously. You're laughing, but I'm serious.
No, I believe it. I love it.
So when
it's not my job.
It's not my job. And too often managers try and make their people quote unquote well-rounded. No, you're making them miserable. So if you and Paul were my team, and you had something on your performance review for the last 3 years, and he had something on his performance review for the last 3 years. It's been 3 years. It's not likely going to be addressed. But as a manager that's aware of strengths, I can say, well, you know what, Charlie, let me give this to Paul because he's actually good at that. And Paul, let me give this to Charlie because he's actually good at that. I'm the manager. I can make those determinations. You're happier. Paul's happier. Productivity's up. Engagement is up. And everybody goes home.
We need you coaching more managers.
Hello. Call me.
I know we're growing near end of time, and I've got a few more questions. But I do want to, I read this on your website, and it intrigued me, because we live in an age of virtual communication.
Mm-hmm.
we live in an age where one-on-one communication, I mean, you can see, I think as you wrote, you know, you have five people at a table and everybody looking at their smartphone.
Yeah.
And there's not even a dialogue going on. And you wrote in your website, quoting from your website, my research demonstrated that our people who feel connected through joint dialogue, either one-on-one or group interactions, are more willing to embark on a path of joint discovery that facilitates the revelation of deep patterns, belief, and perhaps actions. But it's that people who have learned to communicate are more willing to embark on joint discovery ventures.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do about that in this generation?
You know, I don't know, but I will tell you that was born out of my research. My research was around the success factors of young adult African-American women. And I got young women and seasoned women together talking about what's necessary to be successful in the workforce. And I used a method called the World Cafe, which has never been used for research before, one of my dissertation committee members told me. And I'm a very action-oriented person. Oh, we don't need to talk, let's just go get it done. There's something to be said for conversation. When I work with leaders, I ask them, well, when you listen, are you listening to solve or are you listening to understand? And there's a huge difference.
Huge.
Because when we listen to understand, we might find that we're not part of the solution, other than to say, Paul is a subject matter expert in there. Let me connect you with him. And so it goes back to really listening. If we would just listen to each other. I was working with another consultant in San Diego, and he's got this wonderful activity about how to have a healthy disagreement. Say what you're going to say, and before you respond, actively listen or paraphrase what the person said, find something to agree with, and then state your point. How is that? Because I'm acknowledging what you said. There's something in there that I agree with, and oh, by the way, here's how I feel. We just have to listen.
That's, do you teach listening?
I can. Well, my husband might not think so.
Yeah, that's a whole different subject.
It is,
you know, Covey said it 40 years ago.
Yep.
Listen with intent to understand rather than the intent to be understood.
Yes.
And St. Francis of Assisi said
it
400 years ago,
mm-hmm.
ever how many years ago,
yeah.
said exactly the same thing, that listening is really critical. Well, we are reaching our time.
Oh, it went so fast.
I know, it went so fast, and I feel like we barely covered what I wanted to cover.
If I may, I want to leave with one gem.
Please do.
Going back to Stephen Covey, one of the seven habits is seek first to understand before being understood. And I help leaders just use three pieces of that. Help me understand. It is revolutionary as far as teaming. Help says, as the leader, I can't do it by myself. Me says, as the leader, I'm owning this. And understand says, you as the person that either I support or I lead, you probably have information that I need. How empowering is that for folks, for their leader to need them, for their leader to admit they don't have all the answers, and for their leader to be authentic and transparent and secure enough to say that? If leaders were to use those three words, help me understand, it would revolutionize the dynamics on their team. And that is what I'd like to leave folks with.
I love that. Help me understand.
Help me understand.
Help me understand this.
Mm-hmm.
And you're giving credibility to the people. You're strengthening your team.
Yes.
You're strengthening that individual. And you are actually learning in the process. And you're proving you're a good leader.
That's right. Three simple words about as powerful as I love you.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Anita, thank you so much for being my guest today.
It's been my pleasure, and I have something for you. I always love to coach and mentor folks, and one of the young ladies that I've been coaching and mentoring for a while, she just opened a new business. It's called Sugar Mama Sweets, and you are going to love that. That is for you and Pam. So, Pam, if you're listening, make sure Charlie shares this golden box with the red ribbon on it for you.
Yes, I have a golden box with a red ribbon that I'm not allowed to open. Am I allowed to open?
You may open it.
So I'm opening a box while we're... Oh, that has Sugar Mama.
Sugar Mama Sweets. It is
Sugar
so
Mama
good.
Sweets.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. just as I'm on a diet, that's perfect. I don't pay attention to diets anyway.
We shouldn't. They don't count between now and the end of the year.
That's right. No. Now and the end of the year.
No.
Well, thank you again for coming on the show. It's been wonderful having you.
Thank you for the invitation. It has been an honor and a treat. It really has.
Yeah, you've been great.
Thank you.
And I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life, L-I-F-E. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.